Hey, it's Sunday, February 21st, and this is Beginner's Puck, the hockey podcast for fans both new and old. Hey, Erica.
Hey, Deb.
There's some hockey going on.
Yeah, there is, isn't there?
And we've not got together to talk about it for a really long time for a variety of reasons. I think our last podcast was in August. Part of its schedule.
That's 3 years ago, you know.
It's 100 COVID years ago, at least 100 COVID years ago. You know, we had the Stanley Cup playoffs, such as it was. And I know we were a little concerned about the bubble at the time, but in comparison, boy, I'd like to have those days back. How about you?
Right. Yeah. A bubble, you know, even as perforated as that bubble actually was, when you think about it, it still worked okay. Whereas when you don't bother doing any kind of bubble, guess what? People get sick.
Lots of people get sick. Lots of games postponed. And I'm going to be honest. I mean, we really haven't talked about this, but it has impacted my enjoyment of the season. Like, I'm just not that I still love hockey and I'm still excited about hockey, but it just feels kind of icky watching it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel a little dirty because I know that it's putting so many people's lives at risk, and not just people who are playing the game, but the people who have to come into the arena to make sure that it's okay, and the people who are scraping the ice with their with their little shovels, and the people who are running the scoreboards, and you know, not all of those people are actually getting tested anymore for COVID. No. So,
and we just had just up in Buffalo, we had a ref come down with it, and they traced it back to on-ice contact.
Yep. So, I can't say I'm surprised because, you know, we have, even just since August, we've learned an awful lot about this disease and how transmittable it is. And when you're on the ice, like, I'm not a skater, I don't know, but I hear you breathe pretty heavy because those shifts are very difficult. So the idea that somebody could catch COVID from somebody else while on the ice, skating past each other, not a surprise.
Mm-mm. Not at all. Not at all. So the protocols have kind of gone, it feels like the NHL is skating on not level ice, to make a pun. And they're like, well, we were doing this thing, but in light of having 47 players out with COVID this week, we're going to try testing this way. So, I mean, I understand that. I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into the season being played. I mean, there's money involved, there's TV rights involved, there's players' careers involved. There's, you know, if you talk to the players, very few of them are going to say, no, we don't want to play. They want to be out there. They want to play. The fans want them to play. The owners want them to play. So there's a lot of reasons why the players are on the ice. I don't think they have a gun to their head saying, if you play, you're going to be fired, because they are athletes and this is their job and they want to get out there and do that. But it seems like, you know, as we learn more about what's not working, they're trying to come up with ways to make it work better. And it's just going to get to the point where everybody's already had it and I guess we can all play now. And there have actually been fans who have advocated that.
Oh God. I have been giving the NHL an awful lot of side eye through this because, you know, after it started running wild through like the East Coast hockey teams, then they were like, well, OK, we're going to strengthen our protocols. And their idea of strengthening their protocols was basically asking the hockey players to do what I've been doing for a freaking year.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, why weren't you doing that in the first place? So I've been a little bit annoyed because, yeah, you know, even from just a strictly mercenary capitalist position, you want to be able to have as many games as possible with as many healthy star athletes as possible. You really should have been cracking down a little bit stronger on the way these people are, you know, interacting in the world if you want to keep them safe.
Yeah, and it seems like it's been a little inconsistent because you have the Russian players from the Washington Capitals. There was four of them that, you know, went into a hotel room like to hang out after a game or whatever. And they're like, huh, that's against protocols. You're fined four games. And it was like, you know, Alexander Ovechkin, it wasn't like four fourth liners. You know what I mean? It was like, it was some of their top players. And it's like, okay, but you're not asking them to wear masks while they're going over plays in the room, or like, what's going on? Like, why is that socially distanced not appropriate, but it does, you don't have that same protocols like while in the locker room? What's different? And I'm not saying that those players should not have been punished in any way or suffered some sort of repercussions for that, because clearly the rules were you can't do that and they did it anyway. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying, like, you're being really harsh on this one hand, and the other hand, it's like, well, we're in a different place, so it's all good.
Yeah. And just honestly, even watching games on television, it is very frustrating in terms of a setting an example thing, because it's good. You've got the coaches wearing masks on the bench, but they pull them down to talk. So it's like, it just makes me so mad every time.
I work with somebody that
even,
does that.
Even my coaches, the coaches that I'm supposed to love, I'm just like, you guys suck.
I know. So all of that, I mean, I hate to be a downer on a podcast, but all that really has affected my enjoyment of the season. Like, I'm not watching as many games. I'm keeping up with it. I'm following, along on the app, and I'm kind of following along what everybody's doing. There's some players who are having great seasons. I'm really happy for them. But it feels like there's people who, I mean, we just saw a translation of an article that Nick Ristolainen did, where he's talking about the intense physical effects he had with COVID. Like, it felt like his chest was cracking open. And and here is somebody who is incredibly fit, has an incredible physical work ethic. And you're thinking, we've seen so many studies how this has affected hearts and lungs, and mini strokes are really common. And you're thinking, whose career is going to end because of this? And it just, that really makes me sad watching this. I mean, the Flyers just lost like almost all of their top two lines, including Oscar Lindblom, who just came back after being treated for a very aggressive form of cancer. And the whole league was like, Oscar Strong, selling t-shirts and doing all this stuff. But you're putting him in a position where he already has, an increased risk. And he's out on COVID protocol. Now, we don't have any information on, how he's doing or whatever, because obviously there's HIPAA rules and things, and or not HIPAA, but just confidentiality when it comes to players' health. But I'm thinking, you're just talking out of one side of your mouth here. And it just frustrates me beyond belief. And
yeah, there was a tweet I saw that just had like the quote, COVID won't affect athletes because they're at peak physical condition. And it has the quote from Ristolainen and also a quote from Kuznetsov, which just says, I just want to say there was a moment when I woke up and almost cried happy tears when I realized I can walk and breathe. There were some moments difficult. Everything happens for the first time. You never know what to expect next. The way this disease goes, one day you are fine, the next day it's bad. Only those who got sick with symptoms will understand what I am talking about. I wouldn't wish this on anybody. And yeah, these are athletes who are in peak physical condition, and they are still being brought to this. And I don't think that we are going to have an idea of how it's actually affected the NHL until like a year or two down the line, because I hate to say it, but I am just expecting some complications from this disease that are going to, maybe not completely end the careers of players, but I think there are going to be a number of players who are not going to reach the heights that they would have simply because their body has had to go through this awful disease.
Exactly. Exactly. And it is not, while it does certainly affect people who have underlying conditions, not everyone who has had an underlying condition and has been struggled by this. Yeah, it's
no joke.
It's no joke. So I have that in my notes. It's no joke.
I was reading that off your notes. Thank you.
You are welcome. All right. So that's just sort of like a little groundwork as to why we're not like, woo, yay. I'm looking forward to once everybody's been vaccinated, like we're in a healthier place where I can get back to a position where I feel like I am watching something and I am not, it doesn't feel icky and like I'm taking advantage of a situation. So,
yeah.
All right. But it's back. So there's stuff to talk about. So we should do that. I wanted to ask you, and this is just something that we've not had an opportunity to talk about, is like, what is the biggest roster change that has blown your mind? And mine, I'm going to start off with mine, because it would have been Henrik Lundqvist in Washington. But of course, he stepped away. He had to have heart surgery. So he took some time off, which thank God, because mm-hmm. he's not exposed to everything that's going on right now. And he had heart surgery 4 weeks ago. And according to his Instagram, was out running yesterday. Like,
oh, bless.
I think about carrying the laundry upstairs. I'm like, I can wait till tomorrow.
That man. Wow.
I know. But I think I don't know how I would have been able to. It would have just been the biggest disconnect to see him in a Capitals uniform mm-hmm. because his whole career has been in New York. So what of all the personnel shifts this year do you think would be the one that has blown your mind the most?
Well, I mean, speaking of a Caps uniform, Chara is just like, that one's very, very right? weird to me. So just in terms of the sort of the trades that we knew were happening, that's probably the biggest one for me, I mm-hmm. guess.
Literally and figuratively.
Yeah, right. It just seemed so strange. But I know, like, you also have in your notes here, Holtby to Vancouver, which I'm going to say it's not, that one's not the biggest one to me because my brain literally will not accept it. I keep forgetting. We have played Vancouver, I don't know how many times already. And I still, every single game, I'm like, oh my God, that's Holtby? Every time.
It just hasn't stuck.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Oh, that's so funny.
I feel like it's closer to sticking now that, you know, Vancouver went through that stretch there where they were doing very, very poorly. And not just losing games, they were playing very, very poorly. Mm-hmm. And Holtby sort of spoke out about that a bit. I don't know if you guys heard that quote in the States as many times as we did here, but my God, I saw that interview so many times.
No, that's been weird, hasn't it? Because the way that we have aligned now, like mm-hmm. all the old divisions are thrown out. And you've got the All Canada up there. We've got the East Coast, the Middle, and the West, right? This is basically mm-hmm. how they've divided it up. And it feels like there's a lot of hockey happening elsewhere that I just, if I didn't have the NHL app, if I didn't have the NHL subscription package and could have access to these games, I would not know that there was hockey being played elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting too, because like we've always had divisions that were, mm-hmm. were separate, but I feel like there's a lot more overlap in terms of report, like not entirely, because I feel like the Canadian teams, except for Toronto, have always sort of gotten short shrift on U.S. coverage. And I think, you know, some of the smaller U.S. teams have definitely gotten very short shrift in Canadian coverage. But in this case, like it's even more like I feel like I know what's going on in Canada more than I felt like I knew what was going on in the Pacific Division, mm-hmm. You know, a couple of years ago. So it's a very, very strange situation.
And I think because there's so much hockey media out of Canada mm-hmm. that more so than, you know, here in the States, we go through bloodbaths periodically where we just like cut all of our media people. Like we just don't have any who cover sports.
That is happening right now here in Canada. So who knows what it's going to look like in another month, but
yeah, like they just announced like NHL or NBCS Sports is done at the end of the year. Like that's how I watch all my hockey games, my local hockey games. Now it's going to be in USA Network. Like what the hell is that?
That's very weird.
So I have to like compete with reruns of whatever like 80s detective show mm-hmm. is up. I don't know.
Reruns of Silk Stockings.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Oh my God. That is such a USA Network show. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the other big thing, just going through like some of the stuff that, you know, it's been so long since we've talked of things that jumped out as like, whoa, boy, that was fun. The Pierre-Luc Dubois and the Patrick Laine trade.
Holy buttons.
Out of the frying pan and into the fire for both of them.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's just like who won / lost this, like everybody, there's no winners here is what I'm saying. Like,
no.
Wow.
No.
Yeah. Like that. And that one blew my mind too, because I think we were recording something else or chatting online and you mentioned it like, oh yeah, that thing. And I was like, wait, that happened? And you were like, uh-huh. And I had no idea. Like, I kind of had heard the whispers that, you know, Laine wasn't happy and Pierre-Luc Dubois also not happy. And like, but just the thought that a trade that big could actually just happen. And while we're in the middle of a weird COVID season, just, yeah, that is probably the biggest mind-blowing thing in terms of just popping up out of nowhere. Because like, you know, Pierre Luc Dubois, not particularly happy, and, you know, wants to go somewhere else, possibly because he wants a bigger stage. I don't know if that's true or not, but that is one of the rumors that was floating around. And then he gets sent to Winnipeg, which is the smallest of all of the stages. And I love Winnipeg. I like the Jets, but they are definitely like a very, very small market and kind of in the middle of nowhere, geographically speaking. And I say that as somebody from Edmonton, so there's no shame in that. It's just the way that it works. Yeah. And then if I was Line A, I wouldn't want to go and have to be coached by Torts. So it's just like everybody loses.
They do. Seriously, both of them. I can't imagine. Like, somebody woke up and said, yay, great day for me. And we've already had, we had issues, like, and I'm sorry. Like, there was this whole Tortorella redemption arc going around a couple years ago when all the wildcard teams made it into the final. And I'm like, no, he's an asshole. He'll always be an asshole.
Yep.
And he just, he, you know, he's one of those super abusive coaches that I hate. As somebody who's had children play sports, I'm sorry. You know, you may get very short-term results from that, but you don't get long-term results from that. And he's already benched Line A for performance issues or whatever. Uh-huh. And it's like, is this really how you want to treat people? He had benched Pierre-Luc Dubois, and Pierre-Luc Dubois was just, I guess he kind of fought back by being like, you're going to bench me anyway, so why am I going to do this?
So I'm not going to play very well.
Yeah, like that kind of came to an head, which, you know, I think that's not going to endear you to your coach or your teammates. But I saw that he had benched Line A, and I'm just like, yeah, this is great. This is good. That's certainly the way to get your supposedly star player on board with your system, by being a jackass.
And I mean, it's just, it seems like that's personality wise, it's a dangerous sort of clash. Like, why would you bring on Line A, who has a very, I don't know, strong maybe isn't the word, but he has a very particular personality. Mm-hmm. And
he thinks very highly of himself.
Very, yes. And, you know, so does Torts. So I feel like maybe putting two pieces like that in the same stew is going to over flavor it. That's a terrible metaphor. I apologize.
Right.
But, you know, like, thinking positively, it could end up working out for both of them. I mean, the Jets are not bad this year.
Mm-mm.
And they've got some, like, just really good, solid, you know, players and people. Like, Blake Wheeler is just, like, a good guy, in addition to also being a good player who has improved himself and made himself a better player over the years. So, like, there's, Winnipeg is not a bad place.
No,
so,
but like you just said, like, because of this new alignment with the teams, like, the Canada media is, like, being forced to acknowledge Winnipeg. So
yes.
They're just also not on a big stage.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, honestly, I feel like they're kind of on a bigger stage than they were before, simply because like Winnipeg got overlooked even by Canadian media. And now, because it's all Canadian teams that are playing each other over and over and over again, I do feel like Winnipeg has actually got more of a spotlight than it did last season, simply because of the North Division. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this it could end up being great. Like, it sucks that we have to play them a bunch of times, but I do want the best for Winnipeg. I always do. And on the other hand, you know what? Maybe Torts will get fired, or he'll retire, or he'll quit or something. And then who knows what happens? You know, maybe Line A actually like fits in and things go great for that team. I don't know.
I would have to think at some point management has to say, because Torts treats his players like burner players. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're here. There's nobody that says at the end of their contract, gee, I can't wait to stay in Columbus. You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, how many really fantastic players
than Winnipeg
has he's lost? I mean, mm-hmm. Panarin didn't stay. Bobrovsky didn't stay. And you have to wonder after a while, like, okay, maybe I'm winning short term, but what am I doing for my team long term?
Yeah, it's not you, it's me. No, it's actually you.
It's really like, actually you. Mm-hmm. So, and I think the fans kind of get really frustrated too when they see all these really fantastic players beaten feet out of town because mm-hmm. nobody wants to play.
Yeah, and it's, you know, on the one hand, you get, yes, all of these players are leaving, but on the other hand, like, the thing that you have is a coach who is very much the kind of, you know, he says what everybody's thinking, which sucks, I think. But there are a lot of people who warm to that and appreciate somebody who is happy to be a petulant jerk on television.
But you know, like, something that's how we got Trump.
It is. It's exactly how we got Trump. And I feel like I would hope that maybe the idea that just speaking up and speaking your mind and being a jerk in front of a lot of people is something that will go away, or like the fact that, you know, thinking that it's an okay thing to do will maybe fritter away. But right now, that's all that Torts has going for him is just his asshole personality and the fact that he is a no-nonsense straight shooter. Blah.
I'm sorry. You can be a straight shooter and not be an asshole.
Yeah, you can. It's not hard. Well, he can't.
Well, no, he isn't. And speaking of assholes, let's move on because this is old news, but I just want to gloat just a little bit. Tony D'Angelo. New York Rangers just signed a contract in October for like $9 million and change.
Yeah, give some context here to our new hockey listeners.
Okay, so Tony D'Angelo, he's a jerk. He's a jerk. You know, he's an okay player, defenseman for New York Rangers, and he has a history of being a jerk. Like, in juniors, he was reprimanded and sat out games, suspended games for, you know, being a racist to teammates and officials, sort of thing. Like, he's just not a good person. He has a podcast, and I can't remember. It's something about not being politically correct. I'll have to Google it. I don't remember the name of the podcast. It's that mentality. I'm going to say what everybody, you know, is really thinking. So that's me.
Except not everybody's really thinking.
Not everybody's really thinking it. He was a huge Trump supporter when Trump got booted off of Twitter. Like, he gave up his Twitter, and I think he had a Parler because of course he would. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he's just like, just not a good person. And there were all sorts of issues with that have sort of been floating around about him and another teammate, and who happens to be, you know, not like
assaulting
white.
Another teammate.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm talking about, like, you know, the new rookie.
See, there's so many things.
So basically, what we have discerned is after a game that they lost, he actually got into a fight with his own goalie and had to be broken up. And apparently another teammate punched him, like, go you. And I'm not naming names here because I don't think anything has been 100% confirmed. But
yeah,
that seemed to be the final straw. And the Rangers sent him down to the minor league. He went on waivers. Nobody claimed him. Shocking.
Yeah, surprise.
Not surprised. So here's a player they just re-signed in October who finally crossed the line enough that they said, we're just no. Like, we can't have this. You're toxic. You're poison. That's my spin on this. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, yeah, when you attack your own goaltender, that's probably not a good idea.
Yes. And, you know, there are lots of articles out there if you want to, like, dig into, you know, racial slurs and terrible misbehavior and,
just
being just toxic for a room, which, you know, is probably, sadly, the thing that the NHL actually cares the most about, or that teams care the most about.
Right. Exactly. Like, how is this affecting the rest of my team? Not, oh, you're a jerk, but... So they've turned a blind eye to his antics in the past, but I think the line was crossed when you have a brawl, like, basically, like, leaving the ice where people can see. That's just not a good look.
Just air that dirty laundry.
I know. So I don't know. It just made me so happy, and I just wanted to, I just wanted to revisit that for just a minute because I am that petty.
There's not a ton of joy in hockey, especially right now. So seeing somebody that you, like, I feel is just really bad for hockey get booted out of hockey. Yeah, I'm going to take that joy and I am going to let it warm my cold, cold heart.
Yeah. So it's just the when the bad guys have their just desserts, it feels good because so many times
it doesn't happen often enough.
Does not. So let's just take a quick moment. Think about that. Get back a little joy, and we can move on. Aww. All right. So The other exciting thing that's happening is the NHL is going forward with their outdoor games. As we're recording this, Vegas and Colorado are, I don't know what time their start time is, but they will be playing today. Tomorrow is Philadelphia and Boston. Curious to see how many Flyers are actually going to be on the ice, because we had a bunch of them out, including, I think, the majority of our top two lines. So that's so fun. Rough. But they're going forward.
I'm really excited to see this. I am always fascinated by like the game presentation stuff. Mm-hmm. And I get a lot of that from my spouse, Stephen, who is very, very into that sort of thing. But I've always been interested in the way television is made. And outdoor games are always really fascinating to me for that reason. One of the things that's always interesting is like, how do they get the crowd in there? But they're not really doing the audience thing now because COVID. So I feel like I'm going to be a little bit more relaxed about watching the outdoor games than I will about any other games, because it's outdoors, which is way better circulation. So I'm not going to be freaked out quite as much as I constantly am watching hockey because of the COVID thing. But on the other hand, game presentation wise, they quite often have what I like to refer to as the queasy cam, which is the camera that sort of like hangs above the rink and like swoops in and out. And it is nauseating. And I don't know for sure if that is going to be a thing, but it has been at literally every other outdoor game. So I just expect that it will be. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing the beautiful vistas of Lake Tahoe behind them playing. Like, this is a really cool idea, I think.
It really is.
When you don't have to worry about how many fans you can get to come and fit and, you know, park and
transport
get into the
back
seats,
and forth. And
you can do a lot more interesting things with a game, and plopping it down in Lake Tahoe is a fantastic idea. So I am very excited to see it. I just hope I don't need a, you know, vomit bag.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting because this is the furthest that the East Coast teams have traveled this season, other than the playoffs. Oh, yeah. And there is an altitude issue. So,
which is
certainly not going to affect Colorado. And I'm not sure what the altitude is in Las Vegas, to be perfectly honest. But I know the first time coming from the East Coast to Denver, and I went out on a ski trip. And I was in my early 20s, and I was like an avid skier. So it wasn't like I was in really good skiing condition. And the first time we went skiing in Colorado, it was the first time I'd ever gone to the Rockies. And I remember like the first 2 days being gassed because of the altitude issue, and just it was no joke. And you know, you kind of have a little bit more when you're traveling around the country. Your body has a chance to, you know, when you're on these road trips, your body kind of has a chance to adjust to a lot of different conditions quickly. And the East Coast teams have not had that opportunity at all, because they've been bus rides away for a lot of the time, you know. So that to me is going to be interesting.
I just looked it up. The so as everybody knows, well, as many people know, Denver is 5,280 feet high, mile high. Lake Tahoe is only 1,890. Let's see here. Let me do it in feet. Hang on. I've got one showed up in meters and one showed up in feet. Thanks, Google. Okay, so 5,280 feet for Denver. Lake Tahoe is 6,225. So it's even higher than Denver is, whereas Philadelphia is 12 meters. I don't know how many feet that is. I can't do that, but it's 39 feet.
Yeah, we're like in the floodplains, basically.
Yep.
So
yeah, I had not even thought about that facet of it, man. And, you know, again, everything comes back to COVID right now. But any player who has had COVID may have been doing kind of okay at this point. But when they are suddenly 6,225 feet above sea level, any tiny, tiny issues with their lungs or their heart could become a much bigger issue. So now, great. Now my relaxation about people not catching COVID is going to be like just totally offset by being worried about watching players do extra poorly and finding problems that they didn't know were there.
I just started thinking about it now as we were recording this podcast, because I'm looking like Colorado, this is going to be a breeze. You know what I mean? Like they're used to a somewhat higher altitude, but dang, these poor East Coast teams. Like, yeah, I said, it took it, but you know, I don't know when they flew out. I haven't really been, this has been a really super busy week, so I've been keeping up with that sort of, you know, ancillary media. So they may have gone out there and had time to adjust.
I hope.
I was good after a couple of days, and I'm they were much better. I was in good shape then, but they were much better shape than I was. So the other exciting thing that's happening today as we're recording this, it is Sidney Crosby's 1,000th game, which is big milestone. Big milestone.
Speaking about how things are separated, you know, Canada versus the rest of the hockey world right now, I was reading through all of your notes, Deb, and this is the one thing that I had absolutely no idea about. Everything else, I was like, oh yeah, I know about that. I know about that. I had no idea that Crosby's 1,000th game was coming up. Not a clue.
That's a lot of games. That's a lot.
That is a very lot of games. A
lot of hockey. And, you know, good for him. He is a bitter, bitter rival. I'm still not over. I'm still not thinking about Ron Hextall taking over as the GM of the Penguins.
My God.
Because that's like, what? Like, that just doesn't compute. You have to live in this area to know how bitter, 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 bitter the rivalry between Philadelphia and Boston is. It just is bitter. The fans hate each other. The teams hate each other. I mean, like in a sporty sense, like nobody's actually going to like go beat up a Pittsburgh fan, I think. It's,
well,
Sheets versus Wawa. They have the wrong convenience store out there. So it's like a whole thing in Pennsylvania. It's the Keystone rivalry. But so to have a GM that, for the most part, Philadelphia really appreciated and really liked, he is great, 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 great at drafting and building rosters and player development. And fans really appreciate that. They wanted him to move a little faster, which is probably why management got frustrated with him. But the fact that he is now in Pittsburgh as their GM, it just feels wrong.
That is very straight. Like, I mean, I don't think I feel it to the depths of my core the same way that you do, but I remember hearing that and being like, wow. And then the other thing for me is that Brian Burke, who has been a media fixture on Canadian hockey television for the last few years, is president of hockey ops or something like that.
Yeah.
Going in. So I'm just like, and he is a very complicated person. I have incredibly mixed feelings about him. I don't like his style in terms of just like the way that he, you know, he likes the bash him up fighting, and he's very, you know, he's kind of a guy who just says what he thinks. But at the same time, he has some very progressive stances on, you know, what the league should be doing. He supports women's hockey. He is very big on the, like, you know, LGBTQ support. And so, like, oh boy.
I know.
I kind of want good things for him, but not at the expense of your team, Deb.
I have complicated feelings about Berkey. I really do. Mm-hmm. Like, on the one hand, it's like, you are everything I hate about hockey. But on the other hand, like you're just so good in other areas.
Yeah, you're like, he seems like just a genuinely good person.
I know. And it was actually his son who started the whole You Can Play movement. So, and he's a huge supporter of that. And just, yeah, huge supporter of women's hockey. But he's just, oh yeah,
but he has very wrong opinions about
hockey.
I'll put it that way.
In general, he is very much, you know, players are assets and they're toys on the board, and yeah, like, it's all about the money, it's all about the win, and
yeah, he's a bottom line kind of guy in many ways.
Very much, very much. So anyway, so that's, I just wanted to note that. So even though Sidney Crosby is part of our bitter rivals, I do respect him as a phenomenal hockey player. I mean, he has won, what, 3 Stanley Cup rings? He's won Olympic gold twice. I mean, it's just like the accolades are behind his name. I mean, he's definitely one of the top players in the entire game. So,
Yeah, cheers. It was interesting because I saw that on your thing, and I was like, it says 1,000th, and I was like, I don't even know 1,000 what? Like, 1,000 games, 1,000 points. Like, he's probably over. I didn't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, because the big news here in Edmonton was that Connor McDavid got his 500th point in 369 career games, which is actually, speaking of Sidney Crosby got his 500th point in his 369th game. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Both young guns, young guns coming up. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so we're talking about these outdoor games. I'm very excited to be watching them. Not sure how much they're going to be relying. We just don't know who's playing. We have a lineup yet. Don't know who's going to be back from COVID protocols, which means we'll probably be relying heavily on our taxi squad. So I thought this might be a good time to explain what this whole taxi squad thing is. So let's do that.
It's time for What the Puck, those things that everyone knows, but we all had to learn them sometime. So, Deb, what the puck is a taxi squad?
All right. So a taxi squad is actually kind of interesting. When you think about the NHL coming back and the structure that the NHL typically has, if you have an injured player or you need to, you have a player who is out for whatever reason, you just call up your good old AHL squad and say, hey, send me up a forward, send me up a defenseman. We need that backup goalie. They hop on the bus or the plane or whatever. They're trying to consolidate them so the AHL teams are closer to the NHL teams so they can do that a lot easier. And they show up at the rink and you're good to go. Obviously, with COVID, that can't happen as easily because of the COVID protocols. So what the NHL did was they came up with this idea of a taxi squad. And honestly, the best breakdown of what a taxi squad is and all the rules and regulations about it were from our friends at Cat Friendly, and we'll put a link to their tweet, which is basically outlining what a taxi squad is. So it's a minimum of 4 players to a maximum of 6, and one of them has to be a goalie. And this is your squad. They actually do travel with the team. However, they are still under the same sort of regulations as if they were on the AHL team. So contract-wise, if they're on the taxi squad and they're not playing for the NHL team, their salary is whatever the salary would be if it's, you know, depending on what their contract was. They are still subject to waivers. So it means if a player gets called up from the taxi squad and plays a couple NHL games, they get sent back down to the taxi squad because the player that they were replacing comes back from injury or whatever. They are still subject to waivers if they would have been subject to waivers accordingly. So players on the who are on entry-level contracts obviously are not subject to waivers. So we've talked about that in past podcasts. So it's kind of an interesting concept of sort of carrying around a bunch of little backup players at all times. And I kind of like, while the idea is interesting and it's certainly a great opportunity, I kind of wonder, like, you're not getting the playing time that you would if you were on an AHL team. So it kind of almost seems like a raw deal. I don't know. I haven't made up my mind whether it's a good thing to be on the taxi squad or a bad thing. Because at least if you're playing in the minor league team, like, you're getting minutes on ice. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I'm conflicted by it. So we'll put a link to in the show notes for like what of all the rules and regulations are. But so taxi squad members, they can practice with the NHL team, they can join team activities, they can travel with the team. That is not required, but most teams have been taking at least a few of their members along. What they can't do is practice or join activities other than those with their NHL team. So they can't go back, they can't do anything with their AHL teams. If a taxi squad player is deemed unfit to play for whatever reason, that doesn't count towards their 6-player limit. So they can actually call another player up to the taxi squad. So, and then there's all sorts of things about the cap hits and how that works. But I don't know. How do you, like, if you were a player, would you want to be on a taxi squad? I guess, I don't know.
I think it comes down to, are you a gambler?
Yeah.
Because, you know, sort of the safe bet in terms of, you know, your career, in terms of like actually getting to play, is, yeah, for sure being in the AHL, like actually getting to play the games and minutes and score goals and do all that kind of stuff. But if you're sort of a gambler and you're like, I really, really want to make the big leagues and I'm willing to sacrifice some playing time to maybe possibly get that, then yeah, maybe being on the taxi squad isn't such a bad thing because especially in a year like this, when you've got people going down for, you know, there's all the regular injuries that happen in hockey all the time anyway. Like, right. That's still a thing. And on top of that, you've got your COVID protocols where you've got players who are either getting sick or testing positive, whether that, you know, positive or negative, and not being able to play. False positive or false negative or false positive. Oh my God. It's been a long time since we've podcasted. That's on my brain because Jesse Puljujärvi was on COVID protocol for like 3 days because he had one positive test. But then after like three more negatives, they were like, okay, that one must've been a fluke. So you might get a chance to actually like make the big time and play some minutes with the big team, but you're not guaranteed that. And just because you're on the taxi squad and one or two players on the main team go down, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be the player in your position, right, so that you're going to be one of the ones pulled up. Now, I know that we have leaned on our taxi squad a decent amount, just in terms of, I think, because Coach Tippett wants to sort of shake things up and, you know, maybe people aren't, James Neal wasn't producing quite as much as he wanted, so he got sent down to the taxi squad. But for the last game, James Neal was back up. So there has, I feel like here at least, there's been a decent amount of bouncing back and forth. Mm-hmm. And the bouncing that's happening is all players like that I know the names of, like, you know, big, well-known players. So it's not like it's necessarily, you know, the Black Aces, which we've also talked about before, or something mm-hmm. like that. You've got some well-known players with some decent minutes who are just getting bumped out of the taxi squad sometimes. And, because somebody else needs a chance. So I think if I were a player, I would want to be on the taxi squad just for that chance.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, part of the upside of this is you're training with the NHL team. You're being coached by the NHL yep. coach. Do you know what I mean? So you're getting that exposure as well. Yeah. Which, you know, the AHL coaches are great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, there's some really fantastic coaching down there, and they're especially lean heavy on player development a lot of the time. I guess that's a positive as well. But in light of things, I guess, you know, you're making the best of a bad situation, and they're trying to, this is one thing the NHL did, like, how can we make this easy? How can we make it, you know, if teams are on a road trip or whatever, you know, and you've got a couple extra players there. I guess it works. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's, I imagine there was a lot of suits sitting around a table.
Yes.
And trying to, you know, map a campaign on how they can be, how they successfully, you know, conquer the big boss of mm-hmm. getting this season on. So.
Yeah. I mean, like, you said the words make the best of a bad situation, and I feel like that is just what this entire season is. Every decision regarding this season is making the best of a bad situation, and yeah. I don't know what would have been a better way to do it than the taxi squad. So, you know,
I guess.
If you're going to go ahead and play hockey, which I'm still not totally thrilled about, then this is the way to do it, I guess.
Oh my God, this is like the most tepid podcast ever.
It really is.
We're like, yay, hockey. Mm-hmm. I don't know. All right. So why don't we close this out with a hockey tidbit? And I have a good one this evening. So we're talking about outdoor games, and there have been outdoor games played a lot in the history of the NHL, but they really sort of didn't become, I would say, really standard until the Winter Classic. And the Winter Classic, there's actually one in Edmonton in 2003, the Heritage Classic.
Yes.
And then in 2008, NHL finally said, okay, how can we monetize this? If we can make some money from it, then we can continue to do this. It won't just be a novelty. It won't just be a little, you know, oh, isn't this kind of cool? We did an outdoor game. They actually came up with a way that they could get fans in there. They could film it. They could show it on TV and make money, which mm-hmm. basically is, it's a sport, but it's also a business. So
I can't help but wonder if, like, if the 2003 Heritage Classic hadn't been so freaking cold, mm-hmm. if it would have become a bigger thing sooner. Because that's, like, the only thing I know about that game. I couldn't have even told you who played in it. But I could have told you that it was, like, minus 30 Celsius with a wind chill, which is, like, minus 22 Fahrenheit. Can you imagine, like, watching a game? And there were almost 60,000 people there for that game. So.
No. That's cold. That's unpleasantly cold. So in 2008, they decided to have, they're going to try this again. They had a game in New York, and it was played with the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Buffalo Sabres. Now, It was also a very snowy game. And they said, I'm looking at the Wikipedia article, and said the game at the time was colloquially referred to as the Ice Bowl by residents of the area and Sabres fans. And it actually was really kind of pretty because it was, it just looked like a snow globe as you were watching it. I was not a hockey fan. I did not watch it live, but I've gone back and seen bits and pieces of it. And it tied. It went to overtime and it went to a shootout. And the person who shot the goal to win the very first NHL Winter Classic was Sidney Crosby. So aww. I thought that was nice to kind of tie up this podcast where we talk about winter games and Sidney Crosby's 1,000th.
Well game. Done.
I know.
That is some first-class podcasting there, Deb.
I'm telling you, there was some thought put into this.
I like it.
So you have been listening to Beginner's Puck, and remember, hockey is for everyone, especially for you.
Beginner's Puck is a Castria production for the Incomparable Network. Our catchy theme tune is Ephemeral by Sunspot. Have a hockey question you'd like us to discuss on an upcoming episode? Reach out to us on Twitter at BeginnersPuck or email us at beginnerspuck@gmail.com. And you can find all of our extensive show notes at theincomparable.com/puck.